Well, look, this could be the interview you want to hear. Tim Dean is from the School of Life, got a PhD in evolution and morality, has been on The Project on ABC, talking about this stuff. It's his life, and he's sort of interested in the intersection of science and ethics and morality. And, I mean, above all, this class, The Meaning of Life at the School of Life, it's a pretty big name for a class. Tim, is there a simple answer? Like, if I was to say to you, what is the meaning of life? How would you respond to that?
Yeah, look, it's funny, isn't it? Because it sounds like it should be a really tough thing. It sounds like something that's really complicated. It sounds like something that, you know, philosophers and sages are only the ones qualified to think about. But actually, we all care about it, right? And we all actually do explore meaning in our own lives. So we already know quite a bit about it, but we just haven't systematized it. We just haven't identified which aspects of meaning really matter to each of us. And all we have to do is think a bit about what actually really does matter. So, for example, like friends or family or work, the kind of work we do, not just the kind of work, but how we can serve other people, you know, how we belong to groups, our identity. There are all these things that are there. And if you just step back and start to cluster them together, you see that it is actually a lot more simple than it sounds like.
And so it sounds like maybe the focus of the class is more getting people to identify what their meanings are and what's important to them. I'm guessing, like, so it'd be hard for me to go to you know what, the meaning of life is to just love people and hang out. And you might be like, you know what, I hate people and I love drawing or something. Like, yeah. Is that sort of it?
Yeah, well, the thing is that there are still some common principles that apply to just about everybody. So one of the things, for example, that brings meaning to our lives is the connections that we make with other people. But you can cash that out in all these different ways. Some people want to have a few very close connections where they can really open up and trust somebody and really be vulnerable around that person and feel like themselves and feel authentic. Other people want connections with bigger groups. They want to have much more dynamic social experiences. They want to be able to engage on these different kinds of social levels. So there's a lot of variety there, but the thing that is in common, that once you identify that one thing, which is connection, you can then figure out how that's going to work for you as an individual.
So are there like exercises you can do? I know you guys at the School of Life talk about this emotional intelligence and improving that people have. Is there ways that you can actually practice and exercise your brain in a way that makes you more emotionally intelligent?
Absolutely. Look, emotional intelligence is one of those things. And we talk about it as a kind of intelligence, and it is and it isn't. So intelligence we usually think of as like IQ, something that's kind of fairly fixed. It doesn't change over your life. But emotional intelligence is more of a skill. It's really fundamentally pretty simple. It's just how we understand our own emotions and how we control our own emotions. And then if we understand ourselves, we can then better understand other people and influence them in positive ways as well. And that is absolutely something that we can practice. That's something that you can practice by some good introspection, being able to figure out, like, you know how we do things sometimes and you're like, man, why did I do that? That was stupid. I've just ruined my week because I did something really stupid a couple of nights ago. What could have possibly have possessed me? If we can start to understand what it was that motivated us, and something did, usually it's an emotion, and we can understand where that's coming from, we can then harness that and either steer that energy into a different direction or realize there's an unmet need that we were satisfying in ways that were actually turned out to be quite destructive. Bit of practice, we can get a lot better at this kind of thing.
What do you think about the idea of life coaches? I mean, I assume, I don't know what the title is for people that run classes at the School of Life, but I know life coaches, a word that gets thrown out, and to be honest, it is something that gets a lot of skepticism from people of, like, I mean, because there's so many different brands of life coaches. I, for example, I don't know, this isn't what you guys do, but it's sort of something that's tarnished that word for me. It's like I've seen on Facebook people that I know from high school that have no training or expertise or experience in anything to do with that have suddenly joined this, I won't mention the name, but like this, we're this company that helps people realize their potential and eat healthy. And it's like, you don't have training in any of that stuff. And they've just given themselves that title. I know you guys are a bit more trained, but still, maybe some people might be a bit skeptical towards it. I mean, I don't know. What do you think about that thing?
Skepticism is healthy. Skepticism is good. And we're fine with that. So I think the thing that distinguishes the School of Life from other life coachy type stuff is a couple of things. One is we start from a foundation of the best understanding of philosophy, of science, of art, of culture, psychology. We draw upon all of the accumulated knowledge that has come out of the sciences and the arts over a couple of thousand years. And so we're drawing on stuff that has been tested, and we're drawing on stuff that has been validated through the scientific method and through practice. And the other thing that I think distinguishes it is we're kind of healthily negative about things as well, right? So quite a lot of the time, a lot of life coachy type stuff is very positive and upbeat. And it has a particular message, which is you can do what you want to do. You can be what you want to be. You just need to go out and grab it and harness it. And that sounds really enticing until something comes up where we haven't quite achieved what we thought we'd achieve. And when we're told that we have the power to do anything and something fails, we blame ourselves. And we think that's a bit crap, you know. And the other message that you get a lot of the time is be happy. Happiness is everything. Happiness is the goal. And here's what you need to do to be happy. We think happiness is a bit of crap as well, right? We actually think that the negative emotions are really important and they're essential and they're not going to go away. So a half of the battle is maybe even more than half of the battle is understanding and managing the difficulties of in our lives, the anxieties that we have, the pressures that we all feel, acknowledging them, knowing that they are real, and not trying to chase some ephemeral happiness thing that's just going to fleet away from us. Find some kind of more solid well-being. And the idea is to try. So we know that if we have a crisis in our lives, we can go and get therapy, we can go and get help. There are places we can go, but usually we only go when that crisis has happened. So how can we avoid these crises? How can we understand difficult times, deal with them, try to just be slightly better people? And that, I think, in itself is going to be a triumph.
I got to ask you very quickly, we are running out of time, but I know in some of your like personal work you talk about this idea of like moral, ethical relativity and stuff. And I've had this discussion with a friend of mine, so I actually just want to see what you think so I can take this back to him. Because I remember he said to me, he reckons that there are things that are universally agreed as like good or bad, and no matter where you go. I mean, what's your sort of take on that? Are things like, so murder, would you say that is like a universal, you shouldn't do that kind of thing?
Look, and it's really, I've got to tell you, it's really interesting. There's a lot of anthropological literature looking at the moral norms and mores of cultures all around the world. And when you look through it, there is basically nothing that is universally prescribed as being wrong.
Right.
There are cultures where killing is fully permissible. I mean, there aren't very many, but there are some. And or for example, we look at most of history, killing someone from outside of your inner circle was not a bad thing. Often killing a stranger was seen as a good thing, right? So first of all, if you look at the history, there's nothing that's absolute right and wrong. That doesn't mean there isn't absolute right and wrong. The way I would put it is that morality is a tool that we use, that we have invented and humans have created to help us live together socially. When we live together socially, people have different ideas of what's good and bad and what they like, and their different views of the good life conflict. We need to solve those conflicts, but they don't all have the same solutions. There's sometimes multiple solutions for different people in different places. So it's not a kind of an absolute anything goes relativism. It's a tolerance of understanding different views of what a good life looks like and figuring out how we can all get along together without screwing each other over.
Mm. Well, it's given us a lot to think about. Tim Dean from the School of Life, thank you so much for taking the time.
And you're so welcome.
Running us through. I know there's some heavy questions in there. You went well.
I love the heavy questions.